You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery. It's the podcast where we cover what's going on at FX PhD, as well as a lot of behind-the-scenes nuggets as well. And as always, I'm joined by my partner and, most importantly, friend, Mike Seymour. How's it going?
Good, John. We have an amazing array of professors that are here this term to bring you what's going on. And in this podcast, as we tend to do at the beginning of each term, we're going to run through the new courses that are available. But right out of the bat, I just want to flag the fact that we tend to talk about the new courses, but they're only a fraction of the courses that are available at PhD. So in addition to the new courses, there are a ton of other courses that have active professors teaching them, as well as a ton of other stuff in the vault. So it's looking like a great term, but I've got to say the quality of the professors is just spectacular. I'm really glad to have this group assembled for you guys this term.
Yeah, it really is. And to that point, Mike, actually for the first time, we started officially tallying requests to have repeats and vault courses, and we took those into account. So we hit basically about 90% of the requests from people that a lot of people requested. So if you asked for something to be running this term, in theory, it will be actually running this term for you. So that's one kind of improvement that we want to make sure that we had the courses that you wanted to see, especially as part of the vault courses, which, again, are great courses. They're not out of date, great content, and, again, as Mike said, a great selection of profs. Well, where should we start?
Well, I want to reiterate something that is in the O-Week video, which is for those of you that aren't as familiar with PhD as maybe some more long-time members are, and we do have a lot of really good long-time members. One of the points that we made in the O-Week video, which is something that we're happy for you to share, so unlike classes, which are obviously something that we like to make sure that you have as a member but are not freely available, they're available to members only. The O-Week video, totally free to share it, post it, repost it, do what you like with it, you'll then say what's sensible. But in the beginning of that O-Week video, we make a point that we've divided the term up into three kind of groups of courses, which is motion graphics, 3D, and compositing. But we also make the point that what all this is about is to allow you to take your career to the next level by giving you a sense of not only what the tools do, but how you would use them and why they're used in that way by the kind of professors that we're talking about. So I'm going to use an example of Bifrost because it's one of the courses that that we're running this
time. Yeah, let's start there with that course.
So Bifrost is being taught by Liam, who's ex-ILM, did work on Transformers. Spectacularly great guy. So not only is he going to be showing you the new Bifrost in Maya 2015, but he's also going to be explaining why things are done the way they are and the importance of the workflow and the issues from that perspective of somebody that's worked on major motion pictures Now, they haven't obviously used Bifrost at ILM because it's only just come out. It's not for a second saying that they did, but having that real world practical experience of what's required in a pipeline for doing big stuff gives you that insight, so you'll get what Bifrost is capable of, what Bifrost about, as it were, but also how it fits into a pipeline, how it fits into the rest of Maya, and how it fits into what you might want to do on a real job. And Liam actually phoned me, I think, last night, and he was just discussing how impressed he is with Bifrost in terms of what you can do and just how fast it is to render. And so while this is the first iteration of Bifrost and by no means the end of what they're going to do, so it doesn't, for example, have plumes of smoke and gas and stuff in it right now, it is really amazingly well integrated with Maya in a workflow sense that you can get things done. And so Liam's really looking forward to running through what is capable in Bifrost. And John, Bifrost isn't out yet, so I guess we should just discuss briefly how that's going to work, because if you're listening to this podcast at the beginning of when we've posted it, you may be like, hang on a second, I haven't even got Maya 2015. How's that going to work?
Yeah, once it's released, we'll have it available for you on the VPN, and we'll be talking about that a bit later. So it will just be a bit of a delay. We hope to have it up. Our plan is certainly to have it up by the end of the month. But when it becomes available on the VPN, we'll definitely be sure to post in the forums as well as send out a tweet about that. But again, that's Bifrost is just one aspect of the VPN. And again, stay tuned, and we'll cover more stuff regarding the VPN later. I also want to mention, too, if you're curious about Bifrost, we just published the first in-depth look over at Effects Guide recently, as well as a bit of history, almost what around the Seagraph time frame a year ago. And you can really easily find those articles by just Googling it, Bifrost Effects Guide. So if you want to get a bit of information, maybe you're not quite up to speed of why this course is so important and why we think it's going to be groundbreaking, check out those articles.
Yeah, if you aren't familiar with Bifrost, it's definitely worth doing because Bifrost is, in fact, the natural successor, I guess, to NIAID. Mm-hmm. NIAID was developed outside the framework of Autodesk. Autodesk then brought it in-house, and then the NIAID team and many members of the ICE XSI team developed this engine, because that's what it is. It's an engine. It sits inside Maya. Maya knows about Bifrost. Bifrost is completely ignorant about Maya, which is kind of an interesting thing.
But that actually also, it's kind of interesting, as you pointed out in the article you wrote, that actually makes it quite extensible into other products as well moving forward. You know, you have hooks into it, and so we could actually, you know, see that in, obviously, 3ds Max moving forward as well.
Sorry, I was just having a coughing fit. Yes, absolutely. yeah, no, it is. And it's interesting because it's not, look, I'll be first to say this, I've criticized Autodesk for this in the past, which is developing something looks really great, and it doesn't get picked up and developed further. It's like, well, that's a great start, but where's the rest of it? And we always embrace it at the beginning, but we feel a little short-changed, I guess, when it doesn't go any further. But Bifrost, and that's those articles that John mentioned, has a roadmap, and that roadmap is really significant. We'll see a lot more, I'm sure, around Seagraph time. So now's a great time to learn it, and it is already very, very fast and very powerful. But, you know, I think a lot of Maya users and even people that are in other applications will be really interested to see what it can do.
Yeah, certainly. But as far as 3D applications, it certainly doesn't stop at Maya and the 2015 release. We're really excited, as I know many of you are as well, reading the forums and seeing the tweets after our announcement. And we actually have two new Houdini courses, which is, I think, really great. It's nice to have a big selection of those courses back again. The first of which we've been planning for several terms. We talk a lot about our planning process, but we've been looking forward to this one. Andrew Lowell's returning to teach Houdini 2.10, which is covering wire and cloth dynamics. And of course, those of you who've taken Andrew's courses in the past know that he has really outstanding production experience and brings a lot of that insider knowledge as to how you use the tools on the job. It's certainly, as Micah talked about earlier, it's how to work it into your workflow in sensible ways. And this course is generally going to be broken up into two parts, I guess you could say, or two major projects, and that's covering wire basics as well as cloth basics and destruction with cloth and wires. The first part of it's going to be utilized basically working with a tree. A tree was generated actually in SpeedTree. For this purpose, and then the second part it's going to build to after you get that foundation laid to a larger destruction sim utilizing a bridge and so forth. And the idea being, again, sharing this production knowledge, building with some basics on, you know, I would say a little bit of a simpler model, I guess you could say, and then building towards something larger at the end.
Yeah, really, again, this tremendous production experience so that you've got these tools in a context. And, you know, obviously cloth sims is something you'd think of in terms of character work. And yet, you know, we're not looking at it in terms of character-based effects tasks.
Yeah, and then following up on that, we have our second Houdini course. Nick Nimble's returning to teach. Again, I'm noticing the forums, a lot of people were happy to see him back again. And Nick started out in Amsterdam with our friends, actually. Mike and I, the ambassadors in Amsterdam. And then actually kind of switched gears a bit and did a bit of work with Houdini. Actually, I think it was an internship, actually, he did it. Side Effects, actually. And then actually joined Double Negative, getting his production chops, working on Man of Steel. But what Nick's going to cover is, I don't want to call it new, I'm calling the recent release, I guess, of Houdini 13. Mm. But they really extended their Ocean Effects tools as part of that application. And the idea behind this course is to actually give you a sensible working understanding of the tools and how they work and then how they can actually help drive other effects. So the example that he's using that you'll see in the O-Week video is actually, you know, a large wave shot with a lot of crashing waves of a boat on a rough sea and how to work with that. Now, I think it's important to put in perspective, this is not about doing a final rendering of the perfect storm right? A 10-week class is not the appropriate place for that, and frankly, couldn't be done. This is intended to give you a good, solid understanding of the tools and then be able to use those to actually create these effects and build upon them. And we'll actually do some talk about the simulation and, again, the realities of what you can do with simulations in a smaller, let's call it individual setup versus, of course, a larger production facility. Obviously, simulations are quite taxing on both CPU and GPU architectures. So there's going to be a little bit of reality check as well as to what you can accomplish and what is sensible to accomplish in your workflow creating this type of effect.
So can we shift gears and discuss Microsoft Kinect and Maurice May? Because I just think this is I've been getting a lot of good feedback about this. People just going, in fact, somebody said it sounded so cool and interesting that they were first of all worried it was an April Fool's, which I'm not quite sure how I took that. But anyway.
Yes, actually, I think, yes, Mr. Mulligan, I believe, said that. He's like, he wasn't quite sure. But yes, no April Fool's jokes on our side. But yeah, I mean, what was your reaction when you first heard? I'm kind of curious because we Mike and I both work really hard on these coming up with these courses throughout the term. But you know, as our discussions, I actually remember your initial your reaction to it, which is why I'm asking.
Yeah, I think this is exactly what you want. Every term, we want to have something in there that is a bit from left field and outside the kind of normal constraints. I do think there's an enormous benefit of getting off your chair and moving around the room and doing stuff. And if that means you're acting out stuff in front of your own little motion control, motion capture stage kind of thing, because you've managed to rig up something, that's exactly the kind of stuff you need to plus a script and plus a project and do things. And I'm immensely interested. I was like, literally, I'm going to have to buy a PC, aren't I?
Yes.
Like, that's like what's running through my head. Yeah. So I already have, you know, the Microsoft side of things, but this can be applicable to a Mac, but it's more applicable to a PC, let's face it.
It is, based upon the tools that have actually, frankly, been developed out there. I think some of the tools, I've been playing around a little bit with it just to kind of help gauge this as part of the prep for the term. Running some of the tools in a virtual environment, such as Fusion or Parallels, some of them actually work quite fine. Others are so computationally intensive that it does bog down in that virtualization environment, so not the best choice. Obviously, you'd want to root system running Windows as opposed to running Windows on Mac. But
yeah,
it can be approachable for those of you who have Parallels or Fusion and Windows installation. You can actually, you know, get quite a lot of done, or at least follow along with the course. The thing I like about the course is, I got into the industry because I liked it and had fun and enjoyed the craft.
Yeah.
And for me, this is going to be fun. It's going to be learning that is fun. I mean, it's like, why can't we have both? And I think
why can't we have some fun?
Yeah. And I think also a sensible discussion of how far you can take it, where it's appropriate, and where you actually need to take it to the next level as well. A sensible discussion regarding that is I think, good and reasonable to have as part of this. But yes, when speaking about this with Morris, I'm totally excited about this course.
I've been really spoiled. I've worked with some guys over the years that are this kind of guys. One of our profs, Steve from an earlier term, was exactly this kind of thing. And Andrew is another, who's now a supervisor. In fact, Andrew once built, you know, a light stage.
Yeah.
He got a bunch of pipe, like a plastic, I think you'd call it PVC or polyurethane pipe. Yeah. And cable ties, and built his own Hexa-Watson-Medovi dome, and then started rigging up his own LEDs in it because he had 2 days off because a project was moved back, and he just started building it on his own because he thought, light stages are cool, but I'm stuck in Sydney. There isn't one here, so I'll try and build my own. And funny story, Paul Dubevic heard about this, and he was coming to visit, and so Andrew pulled it all apart and hid it because he thought, you know, it's so offensive to have, like, kind of nicked the idea and done this. And Paul was like, I was so looking forward to seeing it. Where is it? Oh, not here. So I just thought it was so cool that someone was like that enthusiastic about the tech that they just got off their, you know, backside and just thought, well, I guess I could build a rough one of these. And that's, I think, part of the key to this with the Kinect is that, you know, maybe this isn't the total solution for what you need,
right?
But maybe it's enough to get the funding for the total solution that you need. And that could be really great. It could be that it's all you need at this stage in the project. But, you know, And I'm not saying that it isn't, but there will be other times when it's enough to be able to do a proof of concept to win a job, or enough that you could get something hammered out that's better than you could otherwise do and falls maybe short of the proper, as it were, solution. But who cares, right? You know, if it works, no one's going to give you points later because of what you use to get there. They just care about what's on the screen.
Yeah, very much so. Well, anyway, I'm totally looking forward to it. Totally stoked for this course in particular, and actually several other ones as well.
So why don't we jump to your area of expertise, because I totally confess, dear listeners, that John is the creative director of our company and responsible for all things stylish, and discuss motion graphics, because this really is close to your heart.
Well, you spoke about the profs at the beginning of the DoD, and I think this is the first one that I want to highlight is a big one for us, and that's Tim Clapham, who's been working with us for, I was going to actually look it up. I should have looked it up. I don't know how many terms, but very close to the beginning of FX PhD. And our members actually really know and love his courses from a preparation standpoint and a presentation standpoint, and just frankly creating really cool graphics and using Cinema 4D in very interesting ways. And this course is basically building upon that tradition with, I think, even cooler stuff. They're going to do... he's actually a big fan of MoGraph and Dynamics, and so you can see several classes that involve that, basically kind of programmable or instancing of effects and things like that, and driving animation with math and effectors. But also really interesting, I saw a glimpse of what he had done, showed me some really interesting typography, and then wrapping it up all at the end with kind of a three or four part class on a project for a toy machine as well, and kind of showing how he takes all the stuff that kind of covered a little bit in detail in the first part of the course and actually build and kind of take it up to 11, so to speak, I guess you could say, for the end of the project, towards the end of the term. And again, he's just, I can't say enough good things about Tim, because he really put such tremendous thought into his classes and frankly shares that kind of stuff that we talked about already, and that real world examples of working through projects, where you hit walls, where stuff doesn't work, and where you can actually really use the tools to take all the graphics, you know, as I'd like to say, to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim's great. I mean, hell of a nice guy, too.
Yeah, it is. And again, I think that his course just, again, those of you who've taken his offerings in the past, you'll enjoy this. We're also running several of his repeat courses as well. So if you haven't had the opportunity to take courses from Tim, you'll have that opportunity this term as well. You can select them both from standard courses and I think a couple in the vault as well.
So let's talk about Touch Designer, because that's not the most obvious thing in the world, and yet it's particularly interesting.
Yeah, it really is. So Touch Designer, if you don't know it already, it's used to do a lot of graphics for installations, which is what we're focusing on here, but also live performance type things as well. A lot of people are using it to actually create UI and graphical elements that they render and then or capture and then take into, say, After Effects, and use them in different ways. It's almost a graphic design and graphics generation tool that actually was born out of Houdini. I think it was, I'm going to probably get called on this by someone, and please feel free to do so. I think it was around like Houdini 4 or something. It actually got spun off from Side Effects.
Well, it was one of the founders of...
Yeah.
Yeah, and because I remember pre-Houdini into the Prism days. And for a while we watched this kind of spin-off of a... Well, it wasn't really a spin-off. It's kind of the wrong way to describe it, really. It was a new project for one of the founders, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. Because it's not as if this is a... there's no bad blood between them, but it's not as if this was like a module of Houdini that was then hived off. A spin-off makes it sound like that was the case. This is new and different. And I've got to say, again, so important, because the work that we do is so... far-reaching now. It isn't just a matter of doing stuff for a TVC, a film, or maybe some episodic, and doing installations, doing art pieces, doing really good interactive things. Used to be a pretty small part of what was the industry. It's grown so much now. Gosh, I mean, think about those massive video projector things. Like, they're just all the rage. We've covered those in background and elsewhere. There's a lot of serious work, big money, and really interesting creative work done in these areas.
Yeah, it is. And you'll recognize, because again, it was, well, it was spun off from Houdini, but you'll see a lot of the same things in it, like Chops, a lot of procedural factors within it. If you look at a lot of stuff, you can tell it's very procedural graphics and things like that. Kind of a bit of programming and you know, with object-oriented builds that you can do in nodes and things like that. So it's quite interesting. If you're familiar with Houdini and the way that it works, you will see the parallels between the way Touch Designer works, which again is no longer part of Side Effects, but part of Derivative now, as Mike pointed out. But again, I think I've been wanting to do this, find someone to do this course for a while. I think, I guess you could, it's not a guilty pleasure, but one of the pleasures of FX PhD and finding courses for FX PhD is knowing that things that Mike and I find interesting, it's likely that you will find interesting as well. Those of you who are members of FX PhD will find interesting. And this, I have to say, it's like, I really wanted to know more about Touch Designer. So in addition to the requests that we got from members, it's something I wanted. So I'm really happy to have Mary teaching the course this term for us. And I think, again, don't be scared away, but don't be kind of turned off if you're not interested in doing installation work. You're going to learn how to use Touch Designer. And I think having a sensible project to do as part of this course, and since it is used for many installations, I think it's a sensible way to kind of approach learning the application. So again, check out the first two classes, check out her a week video. And I hope it piques your interest, because I think it's going to be a really great course.
You know, it's not unheard of for Touch Designer designers to actually use a Microsoft Kinect to feed into a...
Yes.
It's almost like we planned it.
Well said, my friend. Well said. So, again, yes, very much looking forward to this term. I was not kidding about that part in the O-Week video.
Hey, we, in the sort of general discussion about things, included in what we've called motion graphics stuff, our speed grade course. I guess that's not strictly true, but it's been always an issue for us as to almost who these days is the responsible person that would be using and grading material. And the answer is almost everybody. It's clearly still the case that they're very experienced color graders and people that are colorists that do terrific work on major pictures and a whole bunch of stuff. But it's also true that a lot of people are grading their own material and doing interesting things with grading. And I'd have to say that if you had to pick one of the three categories, it's probably closest to the design field in terms of coming up with really good color palettes and understanding the emotional impact of color. So, hey, that's where we've learned, I've lumped it for the time being. Do you want to discuss the speed grade course?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's really, you mentioned that, because I think that's really philosophically what this course is about. I mean, again, color is about storytelling and creating emotional moods. And so that's kind of the thread throughout this. You know, I generally like to think of it, and we've done that with our craft of grading courses, that the buttons that you push is secondary, right? I think especially in color, this is the case. And Robert Ruffo, who's teaching this and is a first-time prof with us this term, is really excited about it, because he's going to bring that philosophy to it. And I think it's also driven by, I mean, quite frankly, how do you use speed grade within your workflow, or why would you use speed grade within your workflow? I mean, Resolve is a really incredibly solid color grading application with a long heritage, a lot of great tools, and the price is right for that. So I think it comes down to, how do you use speed grade, why you would use it, and how do you make it work with all the other applications? It doesn't have the same kind of look tools and look generation tools that Resolve, frankly, has, or other color grading tools have. So how do you use it? How do you make the most out of it? And that's what Robert's going to touch on and focus on as part of his course. I will say as well, because it's part of the Creative Cloud membership, I think a lot more people have that in their arsenal, so to speak, right, Mike? It's like, it comes along free for the ride, because I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe most people who have the Creative Cloud subscription for Premiere or After Effects have those all those products, right? And they're not just, you know, yeah, it, sticking and, with Photoshop or whatever.
And I think the other thing, and you posted something about this on FX Guide, is that they're doing things to make it less like you need a panel to operate, which is one of the points I was trying to touch on earlier. So, right. For example, whereas before, if you didn't have a panel, it was kind of a little harder. Now in the UI, if you don't have a control surface, then the color wheels have sliders next to them and stuff. So there's this move to make it a wider product for people that are wanting to grade, do really serious work, but just aren't first and foremost colorists with big panels and all the stuff that goes with it. So yeah, I think it's a great time to be looking at SpeedGrade and that new upgrade, including the links and stuff that it has, and the master clip effect, which I love over in Premiere and stuff as well. It's all really good stuff from Adobe.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I love the fact that in addition to just actually looking at it, Robert's really interested in actually just sharing his knowledge and building his own color grading suite and some of the insights into that. And I actually think that's kind of a nice little aspect of the course as well. It's not simply about, you know, knowing which buttons to push. You know, you're going to know that by the end of the course, but actually kind of, again, talking about the overall philosophy of color as and well as how you can build an effective system if you have clients or even grading yourself. I think it's going to be great. Actually, the other aspect that I really love is he is so into and so looking forward to members of the course actually submitting their work and submitting their grades. And so he's going to have a formalized homework assignment each and every class for you guys as part of this, because he really wants to get the discussion going in the forums, which is a great aspect of FX PhD, is the ability to chat with a professor, speak with a person who's teaching your course. And he really just he wants to use that to take it to a different level as far as feedback and homework. So I think it'll be a fun trial, I guess you can say, to actually build upon what we've done in the past.
Yeah, it really does make a difference being able to talk to people and actually get that feedback. Because if you don't understand something, you just think to yourself, well, is it just me? Has the software changed? Maybe this is not up to date. Maybe something's different. Why is it not the case? And there's a feeling that the material, the educational material, has kind of been frozen in time. If you have the prof there in the forums, then it's a case of, okay, so now it's an alive thing and it's very much current. And I can discuss with someone why that is, why I might be experiencing that. And I no longer feel like I've got a snapshot from whenever this was made, whenever that was. Now it's current, it's happening right now, and I can have a dialogue with them. It's a big psychological difference. And if you can take advantage of that in the forums, you'll get a lot more out of stuff. John, I was wondering if I could, you may be, and I fully accept that you are, the talented motion graphics individual in the company, but I have to confess, one of the profs who's teaching the course is a very, very old friend of mine, and in fact dates from about two or three companies ago. I first met Mark when he'd just come off the Bond films, and that's Mark Bowie. Mark's been teaching with us before. Mark's an Emmy Award-winning designer, does really great stuff. As I said, he's done feature film stuff. He has I believe, the shortest cameo in history in, I think, The Fifth Element and a couple of other films that he's been in. But he's just got that typography, style, design, aesthetic. He just cares about the details. So you can claim the skill base, but I'm just going to claim him as an old friend first and foremost. And I'm so glad to have him back doing our motion angles for motion design course. So that's MOG 213. And one of the things that he's going to be starting off with is looking at infographic sequences. And I think you and I have discussed this before, mm-hmm. but I think one of the really hard things, if you've never done it, is trying to design a dummy screen to go on a monitor insert. You know, you think it's really easy. You think, yeah, I just make up some stuff. It's just no one's looking at it, right? It's not normally a plot point. It's not, maybe sometimes it is, but, you know, there are obviously very key infographics that are big plot points. But I can not tell you what the film is because it hasn't come out yet. But imagine a major, major motion picture with, you know, big, big, big budget and very big, well-known subject. Anyway, and I was in a review where they were going over the infographics trying to explain this thing. And I was looking at it and it was just so fascinating because everyone in the room could articulate what we wanted the graphic to... Oh, I wasn't speaking, I was just observing. But what they wanted the graphic to do, to communicate. But it had to look like it was the sort of thing that group of individuals in the story would have going on at that time. And it was just... amazing to me. This is some of the best people in the world. And everyone's, well, what if it did? Well, that's kind of pulsing and it wouldn't pulse. And of course, there is no right or wrong. It's just your perception of what a piece of graphics on a monitor would look like in a completely fictitious environment. And there must have been 15 minutes discussion around this one thing, all saying, hey, this guy's going to the right. That was about it. That's all they had to basically do. And I'll tell you what it was once the film comes out. But, oh, my God. And so anyway, I have enormous respect for the graphic artists and designers who come up with what looks like completely meaningful, sensible, but yet is totally made up graphics.
And you know what? We went through that with Sheena's course in Visual Effects Supervisor, where some of the most difficult creation was effectively creating what almost an operating system from scratch, right? That you're going to need to do as far as the graphics on the table and other places. So, yeah, and Mark does. Mark, you mentioned that, and Mark's typography skills are far really amazing compared to mine. I mean, he has just really sensitivity.
It is. It's sensitive, layout, isn't it? That's a good word.
Yeah. He for typography that I could only hope to have. And it just shows in everything he does. I mean, from his work, obviously, on screen to his design for, you know, the Rum Diaries restaurant stuff that he did. It's just to have the opportunity to actually learn from something like him is actually invaluable. And as I'm sure you know, Mike, I follow his classes closely when we have them.
It's really funny when back in the day, like years ago when I first met him, I was basically doing stuff on Flame and he was the designer. So he would come in and I remember really distinctly, he would talk about type and he would rub his finger and his thumb together in the way that you would if you were feeling a piece of cloth or a, you know what I mean? Like imagine I gave you a piece of silk and you had it between two fingers and you were just slowly, and almost subconsciously when he talked about typography, I swear to God, he could feel the type as he spoke, and as he got into typography, his fingers started moving, and like he sort of, as if they were somehow so real to him that he could feel the texture of them and feel the presence of them and what they were. So yeah, I mean, he's a great guy, and I'm making him sound like he's a kind of Looney Tune, but he's not. He's just really empathetic, and that's not the only thing he's doing, by the way. The infographics is just where it's starting. He's doing some great stuff with particle stuff later in the course. But, anyway, just a heads up. It takes all types. It takes a village to produce a film. And you really want somebody that understands typography and stuff really, really well as part of that mix. So, yeah, that's the MOG213 course.
Well, straddling the line sensibly between motion graphics and visual effects and compositing is our new Nuke offering, Nuke 225, which is Nuke and Modo Fundamentals for Design, being taught by Josh Galbencia. He's taught several courses for us in the past that our members have enjoyed. And he's been doing a lot of work recently at companies that are actually looking at how can they really take the motion graphics design area up a notch. And how can they do that? And how can they use that in the various tools that they have in-house? On one level, and not speaking from Josh, this is from my experience, I've actually seen people at motion graphics facilities using Nuke and its capabilities for almost playback type things. I think we may have mentioned this in the past before, Mike, right? You know, not using it where it actually could be used. And so the idea behind this is actually to introduce people in ways in which Nuke and Modo can be used from a design standpoint. And I think we're seeing it more and more throughout the industry. But it's also important to know that this is actually going to be a really sensible look and in how far you can take it and when you should actually move to After Effects and do it in After Effects or do work in After Effects as opposed to Nuke, because obviously After Effects is the powerhouse in motion graphics design. And that's the kind of thing that we like here at FX PhD in our courses, is because it's not someone from, say, the Foundry doing this course. It kind of opens us up to be, you know, quite honest and upfront about how to use these tools within the facility. So it's going to be Nuke, Modo, and a little bit of After Effects. And the idea is for people who are motion graphic designers at heart to start to learn these applications and why they would want to use them. For instance, you know, compositing in 3D space would be a very smart reason as to why you'd want to use Nuke versus After Effects.
Yeah, I don't think it's any secret that one of the things that the Foundry believed that they were getting when they did the merge with Luxology was a stronger design sensibility feeding into the R&D process. So this isn't trying to take something that doesn't have any interest in motion graphics and just see what you can do with it. And God knows I've been guilty of that in the past, doing 3D and Flame, and it really should have been done somewhere else. But this is not the case, I think. This is the case that there is a growing interest inside the Foundry to see what ways Modo can work well with Nuke, which is translating into better tools, which is translating into good opportunities to come up with interesting workflows. And I think that's exactly what we're going to see some in this course and then building out from here. I think you described it as having building momentum, and that's exactly what I think it is.
Yeah, it is. And again, you know, the great example is, again, you know, creating something in Modo, taking into a true 3D compositing environment, because I think that's one of the real, frank issues with After Effects, is they have this kind of merging of these planes and a 3D world with cameras, but at heart, it really is not a 3D application, a 3D compositing application. It's funny you mentioned Flame, because that's one thing I do think it does well, right, is composite in 3D.
But I tried making actual 3D.
To make it look like it was integrated within a photorealistic scene. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not going to happen, right? But yeah, but that is the reason you'd want to use Nuke, for instance, as opposed to After Effects. So this is, again, how do you get things working? How do you get stuff working between both Modo and Nuke, but also Modo, Nuke, and After Effects, where you might be actually finishing and doing those final tweaks with all the, you know, amazing plugins that they have available on the After Effects plugin platform, as I like to call it, I guess.
But don't worry, if you are interested in compositing, that's not our only Nuke course, because Nuke is such a pivotal piece of the compositing pipeline. And Victor Perez is back. Do you want to discuss our painting and reconstruction techniques with Nuke X that Victor is doing this term, John?
Yeah, well, yes, Mike, I'm about, I think, 12 hours away from jumping on a plane down to Mexico City to actually film scenes for this, actually film scenes or film the short that we're doing in combination with Eduardo, or cooperation with Eduardo, director in Mexico City, also a longtime FX PhD member. And he came up with this concept of the last chick, of this woman who wakes up one morning and finds the city of Mexico City abandoned, no people. And those of you who are familiar at all with Mexico City know that, well, there's going to be some work to be done with that, because it is anything.
Never.
I mean, all hours of the day, even the recon recce shoots that he's done in early morning hours, we're going to shoot it in the morning so there are as few people as possible. There's still a lot of people on the streets. So, yes, talking to Victor Perez, who actually is one of our early FX PhD members and went through the Foundry Nuke certification program at FX PhD. Several years ago, and also has lots of real-world production experience. Just talking to him, he was really interested and said, you know what, we really should actually just focus on techniques for reconstructing the scene, as well as cleanup and things like that, because frankly, as a compositor, that's really the bread and butter of what we have to do. So much of what we do, I mean, it's sexy to put in the final composite with the dust and the mist and doing the keying, but so much of what you really need to do and your skill set as a compositor is actually a lot of cleanup. And there is going to be cleanup of this. So imagine, you know, a wide shot, a woman comes out on the balcony overlooking the city with no people on it, no people in the city, or even frankly driving. We're going to do some shots of her riding around on a scooter, removing people from those scenes, or just frankly any street level shot that we're going to do. As I said, we're going to set it up as best we can and block off as many people as we can to keep the set clean. But the reality is we're not going to be able to have it totally clean. So there's going to be a lot of projection or a lot of setups in which we're needing to have to remove people, and utilizing a lot of techniques for that, whether it's object tracking, camera tracking, 2D patches, projection, things like that. That kind of stuff is what's going to be covered in this course for Nuke.
Yeah. Nuke is so important, and there's a lot to Nuke, obviously. But if you are just going to repeat what I said at the beginning of this recording, if you are interested in Nuke, and you know what we're discussing here is is only a fraction of what we have available. So if you were to go over to fxphd.com, look at our courses, there is a stack of Nuke courses. I'm trying to count them as I speak. I'm like thinking that there's 8, 9 other Nuke courses in the vault. So we have a lot of experience with teaching Nuke. We've got a lot of depth to the Nuke courses on offer. I think these courses are a terrific addition to that. But as always, we tend to talk about the new courses here, not just the only courses that you can take. John, I think the other thing you need to talk about, mainly because it's very important to understand it in a contextual evolutionary sense, is what we've been doing with the matte painting techniques and the building on a sort of a curriculum that's happened with what is repeated this term, which is the DMP 201. And the new course, which is DMP 202, which is the Digital Matte Painting Techniques Class 2. Do you want to just sort of explain that that evolution?
Yeah, certainly. And it's one of the important parts about this curriculum is that it really came from direct requests from members. I mean, it's something that we've wanted to do, but certainly helping drive that and bring it to the forefront and get it happening is requests from members. It's like you guys said, look, we really want to do some hardcore digital matte painting courses at FX PhD. And so that's what we set out to do. It took a little while to get together because we had to find the right prof. We did find the prof. We our first one of our first courses with Ludovic Iokem and Nick Marshall several terms ago, kind of trying to execute one digital matte painting over the course of the term. But after that course, and sitting down on Skype with Ludo and chatting, what we really want to do is build a sensible full digital matte painting curriculum from the standpoint of a visual, a feature film pipeline, because of course that's where Ludo's background is, working at Double Negative in London on things like Thor and Hellboy, Total Recall, Dread, things like that. So what we did is starting last term, we began the first of three planned digital matte painting courses at FX PhD. We really pretty much for the most part last term stayed in Photoshop for those skills, because at the base level what you need to do is actually know how to paint and paint realistically. This term what we're starting to do is actually build upon that technique to do the things, taking that and start doing projections, taking a look at geometry in the scene, or just simply using 2.5D type tricks and so forth for those projectors. This is the second course in that. As Mike said, we're running the first one. If you missed that last term, this is the second one, and we're going to build to it next term, where we're actually going to call in, even next term, I'm talking way ahead of time, but to the point of which having a compositor take a look at it and put those finishing touches on the matte painting as part of that. So again,
well, that was the earliest leak we've ever had on the podcast. It was like yeah, okay, good. No, I guess it's no secret. We intend to have a whole series of these. So, but yes.
Yes, very true. It is the earliest leak. But yeah, I mean, I just want, it's important to bring that up, though, because we're talking a series, and I just want, you know, Mike and I want to put that in context for you guys so that you know what we're planning. It was funny because when we came up with this curriculum, you know, everyone asks, we want a digital matte paint curriculum. Okay, so we got it. And it's like, well, where are all the particles? Where are all the environment effects? And like, well, that's in the feature film pipeline. That's not what the digital matte painter does, right? But at the same time, even though this is for feature film pipeline, I would have killed for this. I think we talked about in a leak about this last week, right, Mike? I mean, I would have killed for having something like this. Just because I'm not necessarily, I'm working on commercials, I'm not necessarily working on feature films, all the skills that Ludo is covering are critical as a foundation for you in the work that you're doing, even if you're doing the whole thing yourself. So while it's important to put the curriculum in perspective of what we're trying to achieve, don't be fooled. This course, if you're doing any type of matte painting work, is really useful for you.
Yeah. Matte painting is an odd concept, really, isn't it? Because it's, you know, it's very well understood at the traditional matte painting historical level, right, where it's on glass. We all know what that is. It's almost like, what is a matte painting these days? And you know, what I might perceive of it to be is maybe not what somebody else perceives it to be. But, you know, it's become digital environments in some places. It's become, you know, a generalist area in others, because it involves sort of everything that isn't character animation and and construction pipelines and fluid sims and stuff. So, but the honest truth is, we had, what, I'm going to talk about 3 years ago, some, you know, more isolated matte painting courses that people thought were more concept art, and they, you know, really wanted matte painting. And we're like, okay, well, if we're going to do this seriously, as John said, we're going to need to do it in stages. So, but yes, next term will even be will be even more interesting as it builds on what you've had from these other two terms, which I guess, you know, would be an ideal point to think about, you know, multi-term subscription there.
Yes. But yes, for those of you who missed the last term, the DMP 201, as Mike said, is running this term. So you can get up to speed with that as well.
What haven't we covered?
I believe, as from a new course standpoint, that's it. And you have mentioned as well the vault courses, which are really an important part of the process, as are the non-new standard courses. I should say, actually, if you know, I mentioned about adding courses that you don't see, that you maybe heard of in the past, feel free to drop us a line via support. You can just use that by hitting the help link that's in the top of the menu bar. And drop us a line on support and let us know if there's something you'd like to see, because maybe we forgot. Sometimes we forget to add something that we meant to have, I'll be honest. So if you are looking for a course from the past that you were hoping ran this term, drop us a line and we'll get back to you. And again, once again, that help link is just for anything that you need related to FXPhD as well. You run into a problem, have a question, maybe not sure about something, click on that link, file a support request. It gets put in the system to make sure we answer it, and we'll get back to you on that.
You also get each week a free class called Background Fundamentals, which is, as the name would imply, kind of a fundamental element that we think you should know about but doesn't really fit inside a course. So it could be the business side of things. And one of the first classes we're doing this term is we're sitting down with some artists at ILM and discussing their career paths and how they got to be where they are and what they're doing. I'd done one of these before and it was hugely popular. People, you know, hearing from the artists themselves as to what they do and their kind of approaches away from a particular film. And so we had reason to be up at ILM looking at major productions, and a couple of the big ones that were happening when we were there were Noah and Captain America. And so we got some of the Captain America and Noah artists together and just discussed with them their careers and how they got to be where they are, both blokes and women, which I was really glad about, because, you know, I really think that the industry could benefit a lot more from having more female artists that bring a different and important sensibility to the craft. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, that's exactly what's going to be in Background Fundamentals, and that'll be starting up, as it always does, in week one and running in parallel, though it's free. Like, it doesn't count as part of the three courses or two courses that you may pick when you're signing up. You just get it. It's, you know, one of the benefits of membership. It's in the same way the VPN is. Like, you get the VPN from being a member. You don't get these things if you are sitting outside of FXPhD just buying something that would be from the store. So, for example, if you decided to pick up a one-off Introduction to Color Theory or a one-off Resolve Fundamentals, you don't get these bonus things, which is why we think membership is the way to go. And we obviously advocate it, that we try and set up as many flexible ways of you getting that training as we possibly can. Can I also say, if you are listening and you're at a major facility, quite a lot of major facilities have deals with us. So if you are at a huge facility, you might want to speak to your HR department. It is quite possible that they already have this, but for a number of facilities, they organize training arrangements with us. I'm not going to go into them here for you guys now on the podcast because it would be too long. But if you are interested in getting your company involved in getting PhD access for the company, then again, just drop us a line. We're more than happy to deal with those. And of course, because they are often, you know, quite complex and larger deals, we get involved with those personally to set them up and make sure they kind of sit to your pipeline. So we've had companies that have moved over to using a new piece of software. They wanted access to this and a bunch of other stuff for their artists, and we've been happy to set up special arrangements for them. We don't do it quite as, I guess, this sort of, you know, the same each time. Like, it quite often can vary.
You customize it to your needs, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. That's what. There you go. That's the slogan.
So yes, we're very happy to do that, because again, we know. I mean, it really varies depending upon the size, as Mike said, your facility and your needs. Do you need to get a bunch of people ramped up to speed, or you just want to get people, keep them up to date on the latest trends and so forth and things like that. So yeah, again, similar to support, just drop us a line with the help, and Debbie or someone will get back to you with information about those plans. One thing that we alluded or we talked about first on in the podcast was actually VPN software, and specifically Bifrost, which is part of Maya 215, 2015. Again, we expect to have that software available on the VPN as soon as possible. Hopefully, I would hope within days of the release. But we have a lot of other software available on the VPN. And basically what that means is you log into our VPN, your computer. It's kind of built into the OS on Mac OS X as well as Windows. You log in using your FXPHD username and password. And that creates a secure network connection between your machine and our servers. And then when you run an application on your local machine, it will ping our license server and say, okay, you can run a license. You're allowed to run a license. And then you can run a full version of the software for things like Hero, Nuke, Moto 701, things like SpeedTree Studio, Lightbrush, RenderMan Pro, RenderMan Studio, Mari, and more. So that's another great benefit of FXPHD is having access to a wide variety of software. These are not the educational versions that put a watermark on your output. So you need to render something on your reel. You can do that. The only thing we ask is that you not use the software for paying jobs. That's a violation of our agreement with the companies as well as your agreement with us. You say you won't use this for commercial jobs. You only use it for learning. But it's really a great resource. One application we hope to have something, again, is Touch Designer. We are working on getting that available as part of the VPN. But they do actually have a free version available that will actually, frankly, work for 99% of the course. The only drawback to that is resolution is limited to, I think, 1280 by... square 1280 by 1280. But if you need something to build something for your reel, 1280 by 720 is a sensible size, I think, to be able to do that. It doesn't put any kind of watermark or anything like that on. There may be a set of certain operations that aren't available as part of that. But like I said, we're trying to make that available as part of the VPN and still working on that at this point in time.
Yeah, absolutely.
We know it's important to you guys.
Yeah. So that's it, other than I'd recommend if you got a chance that you continue to listen to the DODs throughout the term. You'll find it a really great way to know what's going on. If you ask questions in the forums, of course, we'll try and answer them there. But they're kind of nice to hear from the horse's mouth, and being one of those horses, I'm happy to help. And we tend to skip break week, and that means the middle break week and the week at the end of term. But other than that, John and I try very, very hard each week to get together and discuss things. And obviously, this first DOD, we're discussing the courses in some depth, but tad more casual as the term goes along as we discuss some of the other issues in the industry.
Yes, it is.
And sometimes that can be just, you know, issues, and we don't discuss what we had for lunch, but, you know, we discuss issues that are just broad in terms of maybe, you know, a new computer's been or a new graphics card or something that's come along that we just think is really interesting and keep you up to speed with it. It's not a big enough item to have a whole background fundamentals on, but...
An 8-week story of John trying to build a PC.
Yeah, that was a soap opera.
Yeah, soap opera. That's right. It's a novella. It's like the soap operas. But yeah, anyway, it's a great way to kind of keep up to date on what we're doing behind the scenes. We do formally leak things, but even informally leak things. I'll bet if you went back and listened to DOD and heard some of our discussions where we didn't actually leak and say we were doing classes or courses in certain software, but I'll bet if you went back and listened to them and looked at the following term launch, you'd probably see quite a few parallels, don't you think, Mike?
I think so.
But anyway...
What possible incentive do we have to not want to do what you guys want?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
We just totally exist for what you guys are up to. You know what I mean? Like, everything we do is primarily aimed at making it a more accessible experience for you guys. So that's the whole business model, right? It's just to be a community and respond to the community. So, yeah, we're really keen to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so anyway, thanks so much for taking time to listen to the podcast. Again, we're here each and every week. And thanks for being part of FXPHD. See ya.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FXPHD.